Hello and welcome to our first episode of Mountain Nerds. It's a podcast just about, well, everything, I think.
Everything that we like.
Yeah, everything that we like.
Not anything that we don't like.
That's true, yes. You'll probably see no sports
on
this, I would imagine. Unless it's talking about maybe sports law or something.
Or, yeah, that's probably about it.
Or
that covers it. Or scandals.
Yeah, it could be that too, yeah. So, hey, it could be anything. We never know. Do a brief introduction today, since this is the first episode ever. Introduce ourselves, then we're going to do a little product review on the Borg Cube refrigerator. Then Sarah's going to talk about WildStar, which is an MMO game that she's been playing a lot of lately. Then we're going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy, give a little review on Guardians of the Galaxy. We saw it last week, I guess, right before it opened.
Yep.
And was good. We'll go through that. And then we have a little science article that we're going to talk about. And that'll be the show.
All right.
All right. So, first off, introductions. I'm Jason. A little bit about myself. I lived in West Virginia basically my whole life. I have a pretty diverse background. I've been a nerd forever. I have a bachelor's degree in biology. I have a background in biochemistry. I was in grad school for biochemistry for quite a number of years. Didn't really like research too much. Got a couple publications, but left and went to law school. Graduated from there, and now I've just been working. I have lots of nerdy interests. I really like Star Trek. I think that's about the biggest interest that I have, if you can't tell from the shirt. I've been watching it since Next Generation when I was a kid in 87 when it came on. And basically have fell in love with almost every iteration of it. Really like Stargate, video games, comics. I like all that kind of thing. other than that, I think that about wraps it up for me.
All right. I'm Sarah, and I am currently a biologist, and I've been a science nerd my entire life. For as long as I've been conscious, I've always liked nature and living things, and I really like insects in particular, and also my shirt reflects that. And so that's what I do now for my profession. But aside from that, I'm also very interested in fantasy science fiction. I read constantly when I was growing up. And over the last couple of years, a lot of that has been replaced by the discovery of MMOs, which are immersive, long-lasting games set in a fantasy or sci-fi universe where instead of sitting and reading a book, you're actually playing as a character through the story. And so that's kind of become my escape, and I've applied myself to it like I do everything in my life by pretty much obsessively reading everything I can about it. And so, yeah, that's why I'm a nerd, because if I'm not thinking about bugs, I'm probably thinking about MMOs.
And you're not natively from West Virginia.
No, that's right. I grew up in Iowa, eastern Iowa. You can tell there's a difference in the way we speak.
In the accent.
I won't pontificate on which is the proper way to speak, because we've had that discussion many times before. But I grew up in Iowa, went to college there, then lived in Illinois and Arizona, and finally made my way here in pursuit of a job. And now I've been here for, it's been just about 11 years. And by the way, Jason's my husband. So.
Yes. okay, at this point in the show, we're going to review the Borg Cube.
Yes.
We're unboxing the Star Trek mini fridge. Must have for any Star Trek fan, it says. It is pretty heavy. It's, I mean, not terribly heavy, but I'd say it weighs
a good 10 pounds. It's got pretty good detail on it. Stuck in.
Oh, I thought you were going to say pretty good solid packaging.
Oh, it does have a lot of packaging, that's for sure. It also has nice detail on it, though. So, as you can see, there it is.
Wow.
Got feet.
Sweet.
Has a warm, cool light on and off. Takes a 12 volt or wall power. Has a clip on the side here to open it. And it opens up. Nice and green inside.
Now, I wanted to see like some stasis chambers or something in there for you to put your beverages in.
Yeah, it would have been nice.
Does it have platforms?
Like a Borg maturation chamber.
Yep.
What do you mean by platforms?
Like,
you mean,
I guess
slots?
It's not big enough really for that.
No, it's not. So, but it holds a number of
sodas.
It said
9 cans, it said on the
box. So, but I can take it to work and fit a couple pops in there and some other stuff.
Yep.
But it's pretty nice.
Your food, so you don't have to worry about anyone else touching it.
Yes, people at work.
Yep.
Eating your food, maybe. Whatever.
Yep.
Now here is the Borg mini fridge, lit up in green. You can see. Open it up. Lit up in. I'll turn the light off on the video camera, and you can see. It lit up more. And you can see now the light off. Lights up green. Looks pretty cool. And opening it up, you can see it's very green inside. And I've got it set to cool. It's not cool yet, but just turned it on. So, we'll see. I do realize that if you're listening to this as a podcast and not watching the video on YouTube, that you can see the pictures of the Borg Cube. But it appears what you would imagine a Borg Cube to look like. It's a cube. It is lit green on the outsides. It has the Borg structure all over the cube, and I thought it was a little bit of a misnomer calling it a refrigerator. I mean, I guess that it is technically, but it's more like a cooler, picture like a travel cooler type thing. I think the pros of it is that it is a nice collector's piece. If you like Star Trek, it's nice. It looks cool. It lights up cool. But the cons are that it does have to run all the time to stay cool, unlike a refrigerator, which comes to a temperature and stays there and then has to kick on every once in a while. This just stays running constantly. So if you're taking it somewhere to work, you probably don't want to leave it running all the time, I imagine. It's not too loud, but it does make a little bit of noise. It's nice that it has the warming function and the cooling function, but again, it would have to run all the time to do those. It's a little expensive for just kind of a cooler type thing. It was $150, so that's not cheap. But if you just want it to collect, it's nice. It's small inside. I kind of wish that it would have opened from the top, so you could have put like the feet had been where the fan is on the back, if you could see the video, because it would have been nice to have it more like a chest freezer type opening, so the things could just set down in instead of opening like a refrigerator, because the width is quite small. It's a little deeper. It would be a little deeper if you turned it up on its side, and things wouldn't tend to slide out as much, I think. But overall, if you like Star Trek, it's a nice thing to get if you just want it as a collector's piece. If you're looking for something to keep your stuff cool at work, I would probably maybe just get like a dorm refrigerator, unless this is something you really want. I personally don't want to leave it plugged in all the time. at work, so I don't know how functional it's going to be. But you can get it at Fent Geek. And like I said, it's $150, shipped fast, looks as advertised, other than it's a cooler, not a refrigerator, which it does technically say on the box that it's a refrigerator cooler. But if you like that sort of thing, it might be right up your alley. Next, Sarah's going to talk a little about WildStar.
Okay, so WildStar is an MMO game, a new one just came out in, I think, the beginning of June of this year, and it had been in development so for apparently 9 years. And some of the main developers were from World of Warcraft. They were developers during the Burning Crusade expansion. And so, as you might expect, there are some similarities with WoW, but a lot of differences, too, that I think reflect how much MMOs have evolved in 10 years' time. So just basically, WildStar is a subscription-based game, so you have to pay up front for the software, and then you have to pay $15 a month. And that's kind of an issue with people sometimes, because there's a lot of free-to-play games out there. But there are still some game developers that are trying to go the subscription route. And the argument, and that WoW has always put forward for their argument, is that you get more content when you're paying a subscription, because you're just bringing in a lot more money to pay for development time. So, I mean, I don't know about the finances of that, but that's...
You said WildStar is free-to-play?
No, it's not. No, there are not a lot of free-to-play games, but WildStar is... So, like, Guild Wars 2 is free-to-play. And they have a lot of new content, too, but the idea is that you get bigger content packages when they drop. So, the play style, it's a really bright, cartoony game with really detailed graphics. So you sort of think about World of Warcraft, which has a lot of bright colors and, you know, not terribly hyper-realistic looking things, but with much better graphics because it's a much more modern game, and an incredible amount of detail that you don't have in some of the older MMOs.
What's the viewpoint of your play?
Third person. Yep. So I'm not sure if there's a first-person option. There are in a lot of those games, but I've only played third-person because that's what I prefer. I like the over-the-top kind of... I like to watch my character navigate in the world.
Yeah, and I'm the opposite.
Yeah.
I'd rather have a first-person type of experience, which you can do with Skyrim, Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah, you liked Elder Scrolls Online a lot, and I had a really hard time getting into it because that is just a really hard way for me to play. I'm used to being able to see all around me.
Right.
And I felt like I was constantly getting snuck up on and not being able to aim my skills properly. And
yeah.
So it got really frustrating. I died a lot.
I did see I don't know if it's a mod or a new setting for Elder Scrolls Online that was coming out that actually increased your view.
Ah, that would be
so
nice.
So it gave you actual, like, peripheral vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be really nice because I found that was really difficult for me.
I even found that difficult. You would get into a cave or a crevice or something, and you would get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And you would just be against a rock or something like that, and somebody's just beating you, and you can't, you're moving on the keyboard, and you can't move out of the way.
Yeah.
And once you killed him or died, you were able to see that you were stuck against a rock. That's why you couldn't move. So I think that is a little, you know, that's a hazard of the first-person play when you lose that kind of environmental view.
Yeah, and I think especially in a big open world type of game, it's really important to be able to see around you because that's the whole point, that there are things all around you that can sneak up on you. So as far as the storyline, it's a science fiction storyline. So it starts off with two factions. So again, sounds a little bit like WoW, but instead of the Alliance and the Horde, it is the Dominion and the Exile. So the Dominion are kind of the current rulers of the Empire. The Exiles are people from the Dominion that split off due to a disagreement. And I won't give too many spoilers, but they both find a world that contains relics of an ancient race, and this race actually has some interesting links to the Dominion themselves. And so your role as a player is to explore this world and to try to understand what the Eldens did and what happened to them, as well as specific storylines within your faction and even within your race. So I...
Well, And the Dominion is appealing to my heart because it is a collection of species in Deep Space Nine that goes to war with the Federation. Not completely different than WildStar, but maybe it inspired them.
Yeah, it could. And they're pretty evil. And you can definitely tell that they are kind of the Horde equivalent, and the Exiles are the Alliance equivalent. And in fact, the Exiles are really strongly based on the Firefly universe.
Okay.
And I don't like Firefly, but I can still see, and from what I've read, it's very...
Like the Reavers.
They're like outlaw rogue types who are just, they're constantly on the run. They're constantly trying to escape the Dominion, who are trying to just wipe them out.
Oh, so you're saying it was based upon just like the main group of Firefly.
Yes, yes.
Okay, I got you. The Browncoats, because the Reavers were a group that were basically... had a scientific experiment go wrong, and it made them psychopaths. They were a whole planet, basically, that were turned into psychopaths, and they became flesh eaters and cannibals.
That's actually really interesting, because there is a race within the Exile faction called the Mordesh, and they were a technologically advanced race, and one of their scientists developed what he thought was an elixir for everlasting life, an immortality elixir. And so he gave it to everybody. But what it did was it made them immortal, but every bacterium and virus in their body became immortal too, and began to grow and evolve and mutate out of control. It became the contagion and turned them into ravenous, psychotic, flesh-eating beasts.
It sounds very similar, because that's what happened on this planet. Was they were given a chemical, I can't remember it exactly, it was in the movie Serenity, but they were given a drug that... I think helped to pacify the population, maybe, to make him more, and it made them crazy.
Yeah, so I didn't even know that aspect of it, but that sounds really similar. But I really like that story of that race, the Mordesh, and so now they all use a serum called the Vitalis, and they have it, if you look at their bodies, they have like canisters of it in their bodies, and they have to have it replaced all the time, and I chose one of those characters as my primary character just because I thought that backstory was really cool, and also because I had just had shoulder replacement surgery, and I kind of identified with people whose bodies were falling apart and needed technological enhancements to keep them stitched together. So there are four races for each of the factions, and so the Mordesh I just talked about are Exiles, and then there's the humans, because apparently a lot of people like to play humans, so there's always got to be a human in MMO.
I always like to play human characters.
Yep. And there is the Orin, which appeal to the people who like to play elves in MMOs. They're very elven nature, you know, that kind of stuff. And then there are the what's the last one? I'm terrible. It's right there. Okay, I'll come back to them. So in the Exiles, the factions are the Cassians, which are the humans also, but that the Exile humans broke off from. The Draken, which are these big kind of like demon dragon-looking creatures, are really cool looking. The Chua, which are these kind of psychotic rabbit, rocket raccoon type of characters that like to destroy things. And then the Makari, which are robots. And so there's a wide variety, and it's really driving me crazy that I can't think of the other Exile race. But
what's your favorite race?
I like a lot of them. I do like the Mordesh the best, probably. I have three Mordesh that are at various stages of leveling right now. And again, it's the backstory, and they look really cool too. They have kind of a gothic emo sort of look to them. They're just very, you know, grumpy because, you know, they've been through some crap. Right. I mean, their whole planet was destroyed, basically.
And what, so, do you have classes in the game?
Yes. So the classes that you can play are, so you have your typical melee and ranged classes.
Right.
But you also have, each class can play a support role and a damage role. So all of them can do damage, but three of the classes can also tank, and three of the classes can also heal.
Oh.
So the engineer and the stalker and the warrior are can also tank. And so the stalker is like your typical rogue, a warrior is a warrior, and then the engineer is heavy armor, you use a gun, and you have robot. So it's a pet class a little bit like a ranger or a hunter.
Gotcha.
And then for the healing DPS classes, you have the Esper, which is like a mesmer in Guild Wars 2. So you conjure sort of these hallucinations that attack and confuse foes. A spell slinger, which is like a magical shoot 'em up pistol wielder. And that's very similar, I would say, to like a mage in WoW, because they're glass cannon types. They hit really hard, but they die really fast. And then the last one, and the one that's been my favorite, has been the medic. And I initially thought that the medic would be the least interesting class to me, because the name, to me, I was thinking, oh, it's a healer. And I like healing sometimes, but it sounds boring. It is incredibly cool. So your weapons are shock paddles, and so you shoot literally gamma rays and radiation at things and blow it up. And that's the character that I've gotten to level 40 out of 50 levels, because it's a very interesting playstyle. And I would say overall, all of the classes aside from the warrior play are very unique compared to WoW or Guild Wars 2, which is the other game I have experience with. Warriors are just warriors, I think. You know, they always have a resource bar, rage or something like that,
right,
or adrenaline, and then you use it to use your heavy hitting abilities.
Yeah.
For some reason, there's no other way to build a warrior class. But and the combat is extremely active. So if you don't like WoW, where you just sit there like a turret and pew-pew things...
Yes, which I didn't like.
Yeah, you hated that. You have to move or you will die in this game. So your enemies create telegraphs, which are big red things that are like the fire that you need to stand out of. And if you don't do it, you'll get stunned and pummeled to death. So you have to move around a lot. And you also create telegraphs when you're casting things, so you know you have to position your moves as well. So you can't just stand next to something and hit it. You have to always be moving. So it's a lot more active. And it sounds like, from what I've read, and I haven't done any PvP, but it makes PvP really fun and interesting, because you can read what other people are doing, but you've also got to really line up your moves as well. So, and other than that, though, I would say it's pretty much your typical MMO. Very heavy quest-based leveling. There are dungeons, but they're apparently, I haven't done any yet, really, really difficult. But WildStar devs have gone on record as saying they're going to introduce at least one early easy dungeon to kind of train people up, because it sounds like you just have to be so careful about your positioning, it's really easy to wipe. You have trade skills, so crafting is always a big part of the economy and improving your character. And one unique thing is you have paths. So besides picking, so let's say I pick my race, I pick a Mordesh, and I pick my class, I pick a warrior, you also pick a path. You can be a settler, or a scientist, or an explorer, or a soldier. And those paths, so you have challenges for each path as you explore through the world. And so an explorer, you have to go up on top of tall things, you have to figure out where items are located, and you level that up just like you level up your character. And you get unique skills, like really cool things that, you know, you press a button so you don't die when you fall off a cliff. And you get unique costume items and flair for your mounts. So
yeah, it's
like,
a lot like Elder Scrolls.
Is that how
choosing
Elder
Scrolls? Well, where you get to choose your basically your skill trees that go out.
Okay.
I mean, it sounds very similar.
Yep. Yeah, for those kinds of skills. Yeah, and as far as just your class skills, you do have, so you have certain abilities that you pay for, and then you also have an amp tree, which is something like Elder Scrolls where you put points in.
Right.
So, and you can select how to put the points in. You get one each level,
right,
basically. And so I think that's, but then as you get up to certain levels, you have to either find or buy specific skill amps that cost like 4 points or 6 points. So it gets a little bit more difficult as time goes on. But just to wrap it up, there's a bunch of other things to do. It's really been keeping me busy over the last month. Also because I'm an alcoholic and I like to level lots and lots of characters. And so I've been keeping busy. It sounds to me, just from reading the forums, that WildStar is kind of in that little awkward growth phase where a game comes out and everybody's super excited, and Elder Scrolls went through this too. But then, you know, in a month or two, bugs are starting to emerge,
right,
and there's imbalance in PvP, and people start screaming on the forums and saying this game is going to die and everything. The devs are plugging away. They do a podcast, a video cast every week, and they talk about what they're doing to, you know, try to fix the game. But for me, and I think for other people who are casual players, just based on what I see on Tumblr, for example, it's a great game because it's beautiful. You have a lot of customization of your character. There are a lot of places to go and a lot of things to do and explore, and there's housing. You can build a house and fill it with your stuff. And, you know, when the one you have in real life isn't enough, there's the one online the where you can spend fake money on fake stuff for your fake house. And sometimes that's a good thing because then you don't have to worry about getting someone in to fix the plumbing in the bathroom.
Well, great. So you'd recommend this game to...
I would recommend it to anyone who enjoys MMOs. I think that if you are a PvP person, it's going through some growth pains right now, so you'd have to be patient. And I also think if you're someone who really likes to get into raiding, this is not the game for you unless you have a lot of time to dedicate to it and you know people who will play the game with you, because the raids are 20 and 40 man raids.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And there's an attunement process where you have to run dungeons in a certain time and collect all these things. It's a very old World of Warcraft type model for the raids. So, but I would say anybody else who just likes to do it for fun, to blow off steam for a couple hours, it's a great game.
Excellent. So next, we're going to move on to Guardians of the Galaxy. And we saw this right before it came out. I didn't know a whole lot about Guardians of the Galaxy. I read a few blurbs about it. But I was very excited to see it. I've liked all the Marvel movies. So we were both pretty excited to go see it from the previews and just from what I've read. And you've probably seen it by now, I imagine.
None of my coworkers had when I talked to them today, but
really?
They're people with kids, so
yeah,
explain it. Not able to get out on the opening weekend like we did.
Absolutely. The storyline, I won't give too much away, but basically it is your typical story where a group of characters meet up, kind of have some strife in the beginning, and then come together to defeat a worse enemy, basically.
Yeah. And they're kind of like, I'm thinking maybe a Dirty Dozen type of group, because they're not all good people.
Yes,
they're,
absolutely.
They're thieves and killers and
outcasts
of all kinds, so
yes.
Assassins and
yeah, I don't think any of them are really what you would call the really good characters. Like
they're not Captain America.
No, they're not Captain America. Certainly not. The characters that make up the Guardians of the Galaxy. You have Groot. You have Rocket. Groot is the giant tree, which I'm sure you know. Rocket is the raccoon. You have Gamora, who is the assassin. You have Dax the Destroyer. And you have Star-Lord. And
Peter Quill.
Peter Quill, yes. And those are the characters.
Main characters.
Main
yep.
characters.
Who make up the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Exactly.
At the end, and that, I mean, you find out how they get the name.
Yes.
At the end.
It had a lot of action in it. I didn't feel bored at all. I get bored pretty easy at movies if the action tends to dwindle off.
Yeah, too much talking, not of it.
Yeah.
Fun.
Exactly. Not enough stuff blowing up.
Yep.
Usually puts me to sleep.
And it was funny, but not cringingly where it just felt forced. It was
exactly.
Naturally funny and
yeah.
entertaining.
Yeah, it didn't feel campy.
Yes, exactly. And campy's not always bad, but I mean, sometimes it goes too far. No. I know we've disagreed a little bit about what was the movie Pacific Rim.
Yes.
So you hated the scenes that Ron Perlman was
in. I did.
Because you felt like it was way too campy.
It was just over the top campy.
Yeah, and
yes.
I agree, but it didn't wreck the movie for me as much as it did.
Yeah,
you.
And it pulled me out of it. Pulled me out of the movie completely. Guardians of the Galaxy, we get to see a lot of Thanos, which we hadn't seen yet. We had just seen brief snippets of him before. We got to see the Collector more, the guy who was tasked in Thor with keeping the Tesseract. You get to see him quite a bit more in this movie. There's a surprising character at the end I'm not going to reveal. Kind of shocked me that it was in it. So you might enjoy the ending. You might not.
You
I
mean
was
the ending or the
very end.
The very
after the credits.
The teaser.
Yeah, I was very confused.
Yeah.
Actually.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some people I've talked to, a few guys at work, one of which I trust his comic cred above basically everyone. He reads more comics than anyone I've ever met. And he assures me everything will be all right. So I trust him. I don't know, who's your favorite Guardian of the Galaxy?
I like Rocket a lot because when I first saw the previews for the movie when it came out, I don't know when we saw him first, during some movie we saw this spring.
A year ago, I think, we saw
it. Yeah, even earlier. And I just thought that was a really funny character, but also with that trepidation that it could be done poorly.
Right. I think a lot of people had that trepidation.
That he could be really campy and really stupid because he is a talking raccoon who likes to destroy things.
Absolutely.
And but I found that his character, and you know, they even made him into a sympathetic character.
They did. They gave him depth. And yep. I didn't expect that, actually.
No, I didn't either.
So I was really happy overall with the movie.
Who was your favorite character?
I don't know. I like Rocket a lot. I also liked Star-Lord a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his armor. I liked his face mask.
Yeah, his face mask.
I liked his smart-ass attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that a lot. But I think Rocket was probably my favorite. I really enjoyed the scenes the most, I would say, though, with Groot in them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seemed like he was kind of a little bit of the comic relief. I mean, Star-Lord was too, but
yeah.
Groot did it without having to say anything.
Yeah.
And that was
one thing. So.
Yeah. So that was kind of unique to me. I mm-hmm. didn't expect that. You would see him do something funny and, you know,
yep.
He didn't have to say anything.
Yep.
So it was good.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite scenes was one where three of the characters are talking and Groot is doing things in the background and almost out of focus, and it's funny as hell.
Yes.
And it's just perfect.
Absolutely. And there's the scene from the movie that keeps coming back to me is they're towards the end, they're in a large battle and Groot is fighting and he looks back at the screen and he just has this psychotic smile on his face. And that is the part that I just keep replaying in my head over and over and laughing about. Just, it was beautiful. Just the look he gave the camera
mm-hmm.
was awesome.
Yep.
I really enjoyed it.
Because he's this gentle nature spirit almost, but he likes killing as much as the rest of the Guardians.
Exactly.
So.
The character I don't think they developed very much was Dex.
He felt sort of dropped in, and I didn't even know until the end, I figured that he was one of the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Because I thought maybe he was just added in the movie because it felt that kind of stitched together.
Yeah.
It was odd to me.
What do you think Thanos is up to?
I don't know. See, I don't read the cartoons.
Right.
Or I shouldn't say that. That's a horrible, horrible
Watch
mistake.
The cartoons, read
yeah.
the comics?
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know anything about him. Except that he was shown at the end of the second Thor movie? Or was it the Avengers?
It wasn't the Avengers. No, I don't think it was the Avengers. I think it was Thor.
Okay.
He was shown at the end of the second Thor.
Yeah.
I think after they gave the Collector the Tesseract.
Yes.
And then after the credits, they showed Thanos, just him looking back at the camera, I think, or something like
yep.
that.
That's basically all I know about him. So, you know, the only impression I have is he's just this, you know, galactic overlord type, sort of like Ziltoid.
Well, I'll give you a little bit here. I don't want to spoil anything, so you may want to stop listening if you don't want to know anything at all about it. But the Infinity Stones.
Okay.
The Tesseract, yeah. The orb in this one, the red stone, I can't remember the name of it, that was in
Captain America.
Dark World. No. The Tesseract was in Captain America.
Okay.
The red stone that like infected Natalie Portman's character in The Dark World.
Oh, okay, yeah.
All of these things make up the Infinity Gems. And in the comics, they go into the Infinity Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
And Thanos is trying to create this gauntlet. Basically, it gives him the power over the universe, over life and death. Mm-hmm. And he uses it to wipe out life in half of the universe. He destroys half the life in the universe. And he does it because he's in love with death.
Okay.
Death is actually a character in the universe, and it's female.
Is it Death from the Sandman comics?
I don't know about
Does
that.
Does she look like a goth chick with, like, the Egyptian Horus eyes?
I'm not sure. I haven't read.
Because that would be crazy. But I'm pretty sure that the Sandman comics, they weren't Marvel. Although, they were Dark Horse, maybe?
I don't know. I've never read them.
Hmm.
But I do know from the reading I've done is that he was in love with Death, who didn't consider him worthy of her. So... he was set out to prove himself worthy. So that's that. I'm sure that story will change.
Yeah.
But you get the impression that he is trying to collect those stones.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling it's to make that gauntlet.
I see.
I don't know what he'll do from there, but I imagine it will not be good.
Well, isn't Thanos? I mean, that reminds me of Thanatos. Which is Greek word for death, maybe?
I don't know.
Thanatos? I don't know how it's pronounced.
I do not know that.
Hmm.
But the... like I said, I'm not extremely familiar with that line in the comics. I haven't read comics since I was a kid. I mean, I've watched the movies recently, but... And after I watch the movies, I usually go read a bunch on Marvel or read a bunch on Wikipedia to... Mm-hmm. Try to catch up to see what's going on.
Yep.
I read a lot of X-Men when I was young, but that was a long time ago.
Yep. I read some Incredible Hulk when I was in grade school.
Yeah. So. It's been some time, so... But overall, I would say Guardians of the Galaxy was probably my favorite movie of the year. I can't think of anything that topped it this year.
Yeah, I would say so for me, but then I usually only go to a handful of movies every year. If it doesn't have... monsters or space battles or
Godzilla
know,
was this year.
Yeah, I didn't see Godzilla.
Yeah.
Was I out of town or did I just not go?
I don't remember.
But anyway. So
but it was pretty good, but yeah. I think Guardians was better. It was the best movie I saw this year.
Yeah.
I actually thought about going and seeing it again. So
yeah.
And I don't often do that with movies.
Yeah.
Unless you're Star Wars or Star Trek, then I'll go see you a couple times usually. But yeah, I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. And you should go out and see it for sure. Next, we want to talk a little bit about a science article that I came across while reading. I think it was Io9. And I browse that site every day. I really like it.
It's
interesting.
A great site just for a lot of general interesting articles, a lot of science, a lot of pop culture. Just anything.
It's great. And I saw an article that said there were bacteria discovered that only needed electrons to live. And I found that very interesting. So I went and read the article on New Scientist
that was linked from
Io9. And it was just a popular science article. It wasn't any scientific article at all. It was just written by a journalist. And from what I gleaned from the article, it was there were bacteria that they had found in the soil that were able to take electrons from an energy source.
Like an electrode.
Like
an anode from a...
Exactly. And
battery.
And use that to conduct all their cellular processes that they required to live.
Because generation of energy within a cell requires transfers of electrons.
Exactly.
From molecule to molecule.
And
so basically they were, instead of taking the electrons from some sort of organic molecule, like food, like we do, they were just taking the electrons in.
Exactly.
Naked.
I mean, we take it from food and we make sugars and then we make ATP from those sugars and then we use ATP to drive electron transport.
Mm-hmm.
We make ATP through through driving the electron transport.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. So we create ATP from the food source using the electron transport. This is bypassing the food source to make ATP.
Yes. Yep.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a better understanding. Jason's background in biochemistry trumps my biology background, which was a long time ago. So... Aside from bugs.
Well, and I think I misstated that in the beginning when I first started down that path. But no, yeah, you use sugar to drive all the cellular processes that end up making ATP.
Yeah.
And we use that ATP
to store energy to go do whatever else we need, the enzymes need.
Yep. Muscle contraction, exactly. Neuron.
Make new DNA. Yeah,
everything in your body requires that.
And it looks like these bacteria from that article were able to just take these electrons from a power source. They didn't need the sun. They didn't need a food source. And that's kind of stunning. But as I was telling it to Sarah, she brought up, she said, well, they have to have carbon. And, you know, that's something when I was reading it, I hadn't really thought about, but absolutely right. They would absolutely have to have a carbon source because carbon is what makes up all of your organic molecules in your body. I mean, organic means carbon.
Yeah.
So
you can't possibly create anything new in a cell without carbon.
Exactly. You'd have to repair your DNA to make new cell walls, to do any...
Reproduce.
Make proteins. Yeah. You would have to have carbon.
So we were just curious about that because it was one of these sort of popular scientific articles that, for people who have some background in biology, left a lot more unanswered questions than, you know, actually told us. And so we both did some independent research. And so today I even looked up a little more on it. And so I was looking, there are two different bacterial species that are being used a lot for this kind of research. And first of all, this is not a new discovery. Apparently, these cells have been studied for at least 25 years, that they actually are able to take naked electrons in from the environment and use them to power cellular processes. The paper that was being described in the New Scientist article came out a year ago. So it's not even...
So it's not even recent research.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean, it's recent, but it's not like it just came out.
Right.
And, you know, PNAS or, you know, a pre... publication release. So it just sounded like it was someone saw it and said, oh, that'd be kind of neat. And
which it is neat.
It is neat, but then the way they wrote it up as well was kind of misleading because you do a little bit more research into these bacteria, and like all living things, they do require a carbon source. And normally, when they're living in the soil, they take up organic carbon in the form of small carbon-containing molecules like acetate, for example. And then they're also interesting because they can use iron, elemental iron, as a donor of electrons that then they can use in the process of building bigger and bigger organic molecules that then they can use in like the pathways that generate, that usually use glucose that generate ATP.
Absolutely.
So those, what's it, citric acid or Krebs cycle?
Yes, it is Krebs.
Okay, yep. Again, long time for me. So that's just normal. That's what all cells do. And so I wasn't surprised. What was interesting, though, is that in the last couple of years, researchers have genetically engineered some of these bacteria so that they can use inorganic carbon, which means carbon dioxide from the air. And I couldn't find the specific method for these bacteria, but another bacterium that also has these electron-utilizing properties, they integrated genes, plant genes, that form the Rubisco complex.
Yeah, so the nodules, is that the...
No, that's nitrogen
fixation.
Okay,
that's right, you're
so
right.
So this is in the leaves.
Okay.
And so it's just a complex of proteins that is able to absorb atmospheric carbon, and then with that generate carbon... containing molecules.
Gotcha.
That then can form glucose and other cellular carbohydrates. So, and the reason people are interested in these bacteria is because they have a lot of really neat properties. In this particular case, they're interested in, if you have a bacterium, say you have a colony, and you're just injecting a little bit of current into them, and they're using those electrons then to build organic molecules with atmospheric carbon dioxide, the idea is you might be able to get them to generate biofuels. So the article I read said they were looking at generating octanol, for example. So, you know, that's something that would be like gasoline, basically.
Exactly.
And so that's really appealing because the idea is you just have these cells and you give them very little, but they can generate a basically an infinitely renewable resource as long as the cells are present.
And we were talking a little bit earlier, there were also... a number of years ago, I remember seeing a program, maybe on the Discovery Channel, when it was actually still the Discovery Channel.
And not Honey Boo Boo Channel?
Yeah, not the Honey Boo Boo Channel, where had... Is it? Well, yeah. I don't know. But they were able to take algae, and they were building these large structures that let the algae grow in them. They look like plastic floaties for the swimming pool. They channeled water through them and exposed them to sunlight. The algae grew, were very happy, and gave off organic compounds that they could convert to biofuels.
And algae can automatically do this because they contain the machinery for photosynthesis and carbon dioxide
exactly,
fixation.
Exactly. So, what the algae can't do, so I think that is the biofuels argument made for these bacteria. I'm not saying it's bad. I don't know enough about it. But there's something else they can do that using the sun, so you don't have to use an electricity source.
Yeah.
You know? But what really kind of appeals to me is the thought of these guys hooking up into circuits.
Yep.
Because they're in that article on New Scientist also, they talked about them forming large chains that conduct the electrons.
Yes, because one cell will absorb electrons, but then any excess electrons or ones that are generated in its own metabolic processes, it will release. And so other cells will get close to them and use them as an electron source, and so on and so forth. So you get these nanofilaments, basically, of living cells that are conducting electricity.
So you can imagine these nanofilaments being put into, you know, structures or things, and if they're damaged, they could potentially regrow.
Yep.
Because if there's one thing bacteria can do, that is proliferate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really fascinated by that, and I think there is a lot of room for something like that to grow. And everything I read in the literature says there's a lot of future in biotech. So you're probably not young and watching this, but if you are, think about biotechnology, I think, because it's going to be a happening field in the future.
Yep. Yep. If you can think of a biological process that might reveal new ways of doing things that are struggling right now, like providing energy sources,
exactly.
For example.
Providing energy sources, creating technology that can heal itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an amazing thing, you know. If you can have something that can, I'm reminded of course I am, Star Trek. Voyager has a ship that has neural circuitry gel packs that can actually heal themselves. Mm-hmm. That help to move current along the ship.
Huh.
And so when I read about these bacteria, that's the first thing I thought of. I was like, wow, Star Trek comes back again, as it does in so many ways. But, well, I think that's it.
I think that's about it as well.
I hope you guys have enjoyed the first podcast. We're planning on doing this every week. You can find us on Facebook at Mountain Nerds, YouTube. Mountain Nerds, you can watch this video if you're watching it or listening to the audio. You probably know that by now. And you can look us up on Twitter as well. And we'll provide links to this podcast and future podcasts. And thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Yep.